Welcome, everybody, to the Chinchilla Pickin' Podcast. It is December the 3rd, 2023, 4:18 p.m. As always, we hope to be entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. My name is David Underwood, and I'm joined by the one and only Baron of Bonds, Brandon Beaver. Brandon, how are you after your big birthday bash?
Oh, and big Cowboys win against the Seahawks.
That was your present. That was present from Seattle.
Yeah, now let's follow through with it. Have those villainous Eagles get beat by the 49ers, and I'll be happy.
There you go. There you go. Nice. So a lot of things happened this past week. I know we recorded last week's show on Black Friday, so we weren't fully had all the full retail numbers from that. And I know I had mentioned that I thought sales were going to come in lower. And I was basing that off of what companies had said in their earnings calls leading up to the holiday season. They actually didn't come in lower. The top line numbers for retail sector as a whole, Brandon, I'm not talking about each individual company. I'm talking about as a whole, actually came in higher than previous year.
Well, it's surprising. I'm surprised that people have enough money to be spending to drive that top number higher. Where's the bottom number at? Where are we at on the bottom line?
I did not give a bottom line that's going to be company by company. It just gave the overall sales numbers for that time period versus time period prior.
So I'll be interested in listening to their earnings call to see what that bottom line number is. We'll see how much inflation has driven those top line sales.
Right. Like, so inflation, talking about inflation, when you have a car, a vehicle, there's certain things you got to buy or do every so often to keep your vehicle running, right? Oil changes, car tires, brake pads, batteries. I recently had to do two of those things, batteries and brake pads, and the cost from the last time I bought brake pads to this time almost doubled, first of all, for just brake pads. And then the cost of a battery had gone up at least from what I'm remembering, 25-30% in costs. And that's ridiculous because these are costs we have to pay to continue to keep our cars running. Yeah. That's maintenance. That's not even like, something broke. That's just maintenance.
That's wild.
Right.
Yeah, maybe it was like $50 or $60 just not that long ago. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago.
For what? Car battery?
It was a car battery. Yeah.
Dude. Now, oh, no. So
I got mine from AAA, but
yeah. So I got the mid grade. I didn't get the low end. I didn't get the high end. I got the mid grade for a car. I have a typical car. And it was $225. I know the cheapest I found anywhere for my car, for the lowest grade, cheapest one you could find was Walmart for $110.
Wow.
And so I'm like, that's got to hurt some people's wallets if they have to get a new battery.
Yeah.
You know, because not, some people are struggling. They're paycheck to paycheck. They're tight. They can't afford $110 hit. I know people like that. I know people in those situations. And that's got to hurt, man.
Don't leave your car with the battery on position or
Well, as we get colder, as we get colder, batteries, as they age, they're unable to produce the same amount of amps they were able to produce when they're brand new. Thus, that's why in cold weather, you see batteries fail. It's mainly just due to the age. Typically, a low-end, cheaper battery will last 3 years. Some of the higher-end batteries will last a little bit longer. It's just typically what you see. And I've had my car now almost 5 years. I've had my car, so had a while.
Yeah.
So there you go. Nice. All right. Well, that's what I always do. That's what I do. I don't get a new car or release a car every year or two. I'm not a car guy. If I was a car guy, I could see someone doing that. If that's the thing that they're into in life is cars, I get it. But like, if you're not a car person, then like, why do it? Who are you doing that for?
Right.
Really, if you look inside your heart and you look inside you and you're trying to figure out why am I trying to get this new vehicle, new car, typically it's because you want to impress or look good for other people.
Yeah, you lose about 30% of the blue book value as soon as you drive it off the lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care about that because once I buy a car, I'm keeping it till it dies on me.
Yeah. So well, you're not planning on reselling, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even worried about reselling. Resell what? It's going to the junkyard after I'm done with it. There you go. All right, cool. Let's get into the show. Let's talk about stocks and finances, right? You know, investments and things like that. That's what people listen to us for. Rules, rules, rules. Everybody knows rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show, and we tell each other what we're going to talk about. You hear the live back and forth, the bigger and the banter, right here live on the show. So, Brandon, take us away.
All righty. So, Pfizer dropped 5.8% Friday after they announced that their weight loss drug would not advance into phase 3 studies. Shares currently are just now above 8% above the March 2020 lows. Twice daily usage resulted in high rates of adverse events, including nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. Pfizer said it would instead pursue the development of a single dose formulation of danuglipron. I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't know why they make these medications so hard to pronounce, but whatever. So it's not being completely pulled off the market here. They're changing it to a single dose formulation, and I think they're going to go back through the trials again with it that way. Not a total loss here. I think the market kind of made you think that they were completely pulling it and doing away and walking away from it. Go ahead, Dave.
So just a correction for those who are listening. It was never on the market. This is in trials. These are in clinical trials. It never made it to market. It's never been approved by the FDA. So to use the term they pulled off the market is incorrect. It actually means that they're just reevaluating and going through the phase 3 trials with a different formulation.
Well, some people were being prescribed it for the trials, but
that's part of the trials. Yeah.
So we're pre-market.
Phase 3 is where you're typically allowed to do human trials in phase 3. Yeah. That's why it's important to get to phase 3 and then have a successful phase 3.
Gotcha. All right. So, with that being said, the market got that right? Like that's what they were watching, the big weight loss thing. In tech, the hype word is AI, and in pharmaceuticals right now, it's weight loss because of Novo Nordisk. Everybody's comparing these drug companies to Novo Nordisk. But what the market's completely missing here is that Pfizer and Astellas prostate cancer drug for previously treated patients for prostate cancer was approved by the FDA on November 21st. The market didn't care that much about this, but I do, and here's why. I'm going to give you some statistics here. A lot of men in the United States are going to be diagnosed. I think it's 1 in 8 will be diagnosed while they're alive with prostate cancer. Here's a crazy thing that I figured out, or that I found out on my own. 80% of men over 80, when they die, they will be found with prostate cancer during the autopsy. 80% over 80. They die with it, not because of it. But I thought that was pretty interesting. Pretty 80% over 80 have prostate cancer.
That is a high number. Now, I have a contrarian position to you, to Pfizer. And here's why. Pfizer had that huge run up in its stock price for a very good reason.
COVID.
Pfizer was making tens of billions of dollars off of their COVID vaccines, right?
Right.
So Pfizer recently came out with a new
100 billion was the revenue.
So yes. And they came out with a new vaccine, right? That just, you've seen the likes of Travis Kelce on TV, on the commercials, asking you to get the new Pfizer vaccine. What is really happening here is that this new vaccine is just not selling. Nobody is going to get their fifth booster shot or fourth. I don't know what booster we're on, but nobody's going to get it. So no, there's very few people of the population that are actually going to go get these vaccines anymore. And that was a majority of Pfizer's revenue for the last couple of years. And so since that's going away and disappearing, that's why the stock price is coming down. Now, the weight loss drug was meant to come in and replace that. And since it's can't get past phase three, everybody is thinking, where is Pfizer going to get something that's just as big? Actually, that's just as big as the COVID vaccine, because that's what they're looking to replace. And that's why the stock is taking a bigger hit, is because people like retail investors, investment banks want something to replace the COVID vaccine.
So we're in the middle of Pfizer's largest backlog of drugs, or not backlogs, but what do they call it? They got all bunch. They got more
pipeline
of drugs right now, largest in history. And the thing that's actually meant to replace that revenue is going to be a new COVID vaccine that's mixed with the flu vaccine. So that's one of the next thing that they're going to have coming out for COVID will be a vaccine that vaccinates you for both COVID and the flu.
But they already have a flu shot, so that's basically making the same revenue. Are they going to charge more? Are we going to pay for? Are we going to pay for our yearly flu shot? Another direct hit to the American worker.
And by the way, they own 95%. They have 95% of the market share in the new pneumococcal vaccine as well. But that's going to be their new thing. Instead of going to get a flu shot and a COVID shot, you get it all done at once.
Look at that one shot that we're going to triple the price of for you.
Yeah, probably.
I'm sorry, man. I hate to be that guy, but I'm going to be that guy. Pfizer needs to find something else to get the revenue coming in. They had all this revenue. What did they do with it? Where did they spend the COVID vaccine money? Well,
I think it's cancer trials. That's been a huge focus for Pfizer. In recent years has been mostly prostate cancer, which is one of the most prevalent cancers, right there with skin cancer. The prostate and skin cancer are the two most common. But I think cancer trials are really where they're taking their money. And let me talk about a little bit about the trials and stuff, and the successes with the prostate cancer. Cause I didn't really buy it for COVID. I bought it because the COVID sales were declining. And I thought at the time that I was buying it at a reasonable price. Unfortunately, my at the time, the price to earnings ratio was 8. Okay. But my calculations were incorrect, as they were moving away from their big years of COVID that'll probably never be repeated ever again. As they were moving away from that, the price to earnings kept going up as the stock was going down. Now at $28, $29 a share, price earnings ratio is around 16, which is fairly valued. That's not where I had calculated it. Unfortunately, it's 20% below where I bought it, to be honest with you. So,
man, it's 20% below, and the PE ratio has gone up.
Yeah. So I think right now is a fair value. I think where I bought it was too high. Unfortunately, I fell for a value trap.
Gotcha. All right. Continue. Sorry.
All right. So
I will argue with the rest of it. Go ahead.
With men who have undergone definitive prostate cancer treatment, including radical prostatectomy, radiotherapy, or both, and an estimated 20 to 40% will experience recurrence within 10 years. 9 out of 10 men with high risk recurrence will develop metastatic disease, and 1 in 3 will die as a result of their metastatic prostate cancer. Probably not saying a lot of this right. I mispronounce a lot, but whatever. But the approval, and this is from Neil Shore. He's the Chief Medical Officer of Strategic Innovation and Pharmacy at Genesis Care. And he's the Director of Carolina Research Center and primary investigator for the trial for Xtandi for Pfizer here. He said the approval of Xtandi is promising, and it's a promising treatment option for the community, offering a ray of hope to patients and their caregivers during challenging times. Having had the privilege of taking care of patients with prostate cancer for nearly 40 years, I have been fortunate to have participated in many of the prostate cancer landscape changing trials. Most notably, we have not progressed our evidence-based care for patients with biochemical recurrence until the completion of this trial. They announced that their additional positive results from the trial, I don't want to say this, homologous recombination repair gene mutated cohort 2 of phase 3 studying men with metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. If I say metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer, what that means is this cancer has stopped responding to hormone treatment, and it's found in other parts of the body. So in this analysis, they took a drug called Talzena and Xtandi, and this demonstrated a statistically different reduction in the risk of disease or progression of death. There's 55% reduction in the risk of disease progression or death. So I think for me, that's very promising. Go ahead, Dave. I'm just studying.
Yeah. So, all of this. So I know you haven't really invested with biopharmaceuticals too much.
No.
But there was a period back between, I think it was 2011, 2015, where I was doing it all the time. That's where I found my, we released a headline at 6 a.m. and that chart that you see that goes up, it comes down right before the opening bell or right at the opening bell, takes another little bounce up and then trickles down the rest of the day. That's a typical chart you see whenever a biopharmaceutical comes out with great news. Typically because you never see a biopharmaceutical company, talk about their drugs and ever have like, not great promising forward looking, news. I have yet to find a company come out and say, you know what, this drug's just not doing what we think we're going to do. We might have to abandon it. Well, they always say, I think we just going to have to readjust a few things here, reevaluate, and it's going to take off and it's going to be great.
Well, the FDA just approved it.
That's good. That's good. But I mean, what other drugs are currently out there? What's their competition like? My question is, how much revenue is this going to bring in for Pfizer potentially? You know, what's the current market valuation of any prostate drugs that are out there? That's the numbers I'm looking at if I want to buy Pfizer based off this. And that's what I would recommend if anyone listening right now, they're like, okay, how do I know which biopharmaceutical company to look at? That's what you look at. They're coming out with a new drug for a certain market, right? How much is that current market really given back to these pharmaceutical companies currently? And then what market share do you believe this company is going to get of that? And then if you believe it's going to end up being maybe a 10% increase to the total revenue of that company, you know, then that's what you should expect in the stock price. But if you believe like with Pfizer, a big company like that, it's going to come back, it's only going to be a 1-2% increase in their total revenue, then, you know, I'm not a buyer.
It's the largest drug company in the world. So
yeah, I mean, you have them, you have Eli Lilly, Merck. There's a lot of big ones out there that, you know, when they come out with a drug like this, it's not going to have a huge impact on their bottom line. I'm looking more for these like the weight loss drugs or some kind of meaningful impact or maybe they've found a new cancer fighting one. Like Moderna took all of its COVID vaccine money and they input it into cancer research.
Well, that's what I think is
that's where Moderna's going.
Yeah, and that's where Pfizer's going too.
I hate to just come in here and just poke holes in your argument, man. But I want to be faithful to our listeners. I want them to understand. Like, the viewpoint of, all right, this is what I'm looking at. This is what I'm looking for. I've traded biopharmaceuticals before. I remember back in the days of Discovery Labs when they had this great respiratory illness drug that they were going to come out with, and they couldn't get it FDA approved. It took them years to get it FDA approved. And I remember watching that whole fight take down and other companies over the years. I've watched pharmaceutical companies that have fought to get their drugs out to the market. And those are the things I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, this is why I usually don't invest in pharmaceuticals, but for the future, I mean, they do have key leadership such as in areas such as the pneumonococcal vaccination. I'm not saying that right, and I don't care. I'm just going to skip past it. I know the word. I hear it in my head. I can't say it out loud. What is the deal? But they had a 95% share in the adult market with Prevnar 20. And then it got approval this year for Prevnar 20 to go into the U.S. pediatric market for kids. There's an ongoing demand there for the adult market. I don't think that's going to make much of a difference, but it will provide at least a floor for Pfizer. And then Prevnar 13, that's, they get an earlier version of Prevnar 13. I think the combined results of Prevnar 13 and Prevnar 20 is probably going to generate some double digit revenue growth in the quarter for those vaccines. But I mean, here's the thing. I fell for a value trap here. I think it's okay to buy it. I think they're going to have a really tough year this year. If you want to sell it and take the tax loss on it to shelter up your taxes a little bit, I don't care. I don't care at this point. I am neutral on the stock at this moment in time. I think, I fell for a value trap. That's it. And that's the one thing that I've been warning people about on this show for like the 3 years we've been doing it. I've been warning people about coming out of COVID, and you have those one-off events that shoot revenues way higher than they ever will be again. And then when you're coming out of it, the stock comes down. But guess what? The earnings from the past are higher than they ever will be. I fell for it. I do like, if you want to get out of Pfizer and you want to buy another pharmaceutical company, a company that's got similar valuations right now, but a little bit better, actually. 69% gross margin, 20% net profit margin, projected growth for the next 3 to 5 years rather than negative growth. It's Sanofi. I like Sanofi to buy. And that's if you're wanting to replace it with, kind of a non-growth company. If you want to go to Novo Nordisk, go ahead. Just know that you're probably going to experience a little bit more volatility with that stock.
What about Eli Lilly? So there's Novo Nordisk and there's Eli Lilly. Those are the two ones that have their weight loss drugs approved. One's Ozempic, one's Wegovy. Those are the two ones that are out in the market. Novo Nordisk drug is the only one that has these multiple other uses. Eli Lilly drug was just a diabetes drug that also does weight loss. Novo Nordisk is the one that has the multiple uses and the good one, that in my mind, but Eli Lilly has the other one. So
what kind of market share are they going to get on it?
Kind of market share is Pfizer going to be able to get in on a weight when they're actually making just the weight loss drugs? Like Eli Lilly and let's just say Wegovy and Ozempic never were meant to be weight loss drugs. They were diabetes drugs that turned out to be weight loss drugs.
I mean, that's true.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like Pfizer's trying to make a weight loss drugs versus these companies made a drug for other diseases and end up being a weight loss drug.
When I bought Pfizer, I didn't buy it for weight loss. I bought it because I thought the valuation was better than what it actually was. And I bought it for prostate cancer research.
So analyst Brandon Beaver changes his rating on Pfizer from a buy to a hold or neutral.
Exactly.
Neutral. Yeah. Gotcha.
I think it's fine. I think it's fine if you're going to hold it for the long term, but I think the next year is going to be really, really tough. And maybe it'll bottom before I expect it to. I don't know. But I really do. I also wanted to say before we move on, before I pass over the mic to you, Dave, I've got another buy here. I actually found this at Barron's, so I don't want to take too much of the credit for this. But RPM International. This is a company that's got 50 consecutive years of higher dividend payouts. They've got a decades-long record of growth. This has been fueled by acquisitions, which I don't care for that much. But they've had continuous higher profits. $1,000 invested in RPM International, this little-known stock, $1,000 invested in it 50 years ago, including the dividends, would be worth $1.15 million today.
Nice return, but that's 50 years.
It's steady. It's nice and steady, right? Like, well, if you kind of look at Coca-Cola or some of the industrials and stuff, you get a similar return. It's just that this is not as well known. So let's talk about some of their projects that they've completed. Gare du Nord train station. Another thing I can't pronounce in my notes today, but the train station in Paris. This was their project ahead of the 2024 Olympics, a water treatment plant in Antioquia, Colombia, a hydroelectric plant in Manitoba, Canada, the Maharashtra Tunnel in India, the Sydney Harbour Bridge Tower in Australia. They helped build Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge in Washington State, and manufacturing facilities for companies including Tesla and Intel. Some products that you may know that come from RPM International: Rust-Oleum paints, Varathane stains, plastic wood filler, DAP caulk, products for construction markets. These are less known, but Tremco roofing products, Flowcrete flooring systems, dry vent insulation, and they have an operational improvement plan, and this is called MAP 2025. This aims to accelerate growth, boost efficiencies, cut costs, working towards $8.5 billion in annual revenue, 42% gross margin here, 16% adjusted earnings increase before interest and taxes, or EBIT, whatever you want to call it, by May 2025.
Nice. Good call. I like it. I don't know much about the company, so I have nothing to say.
Every time I've made a buy, I want to say this. Every time I've made a buy company on a little known company, either Warren Buffett's bought it out or it's gone up.
That's actually true.
Well, in both cases, it went up, but
yeah. All right. Cool. Moving on. Look who's taking control of the show now. Look at me. All right. What I have to talk about, we're going to go more and dig deep into these retail sales, holiday sales, and what it means for you as an investor. Is it too late? Did you miss it? Should you be selling? Should you be buying? What do you think? Just take a look at some of the numbers here. Some of the things I want to say is Black Friday shoppers spent a record $9.8 billion in the U.S. in online sales. That's up 7.5% from the year before. Everybody was doing well. Now here's one call out I want to have, and this goes into a headline that I'm going to come up with later on, but $79 million of the sales from Black Friday alone, customers were using a buy now pay later system such as Affirm, right? So that's not a big part of the overall. It's about what, 2-3%? It's about 1%. 1% of total sales was actually used to buy now, pay later, which is a small amount relatively, but it's up 47% from the year before. And it's continuing to grow. And my problem with that is Americans' household credit card debt's over $1 trillion. Americans' debt to income continues to grow. The overall landscape currently in when I see watch like CNBC, Bloomberg, is I see a lot of analysts the last week or week and a half, 2 weeks, come out and say, look, man, we're going to have a soft landing. The economy is rolling in hot right now. You know, the Fed, you know, we're doing well. Companies have cut jobs, but the unemployment has ticked a little bit higher. So I think the Fed should start, you know, cutting rates here soon. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What? There's no reason to cut rates here soon. Now, some of these analysts, it's obvious that they have a something behind that. They have a reason for saying that they're going to cut rates. If you get a lot of these analysts on TV in front of crowds saying, you know, the Fed needs to start cutting rates here soon, they actually have some kind of financial reason why they're pushing for this, right? So I like what Jerome Powell came out and said. He was very, very much hawkish. He was saying that, you know, I don't see a reason to cut rates anytime soon. In fact, we're going to continue to look and see if we need to continue to raise rates. As of right now, though, we're staying right where it's at. We're going to continue to watch to see if we need to raise rates. He mentioned nothing about cutting. I think this is way too early to be talking about cutting rates. You have to let it stay at this level for a certain period of time to really feel the full effect. So I believe that's a misstep from people. This all has to do with like the consumers and rates and credit cards and, you know, where we're at, all this other, it all ties together
So look back to the 1970s and other inflationary times that we've had. Inflation never really comes down in a straight line. This has been kind of bucking the trend over the past year, right? But there's still a lot of inflationary issues out there. There's high government debts, there's high credit card debts, high household debts, all that stuff can contribute to rising inflation again. It could be a rocky, you know, setup from here on out. We could have
and I agree with you. And I agree with you, and I'm going to invest as such. I'm going to expect a soft landing because the picture now is more clear for a soft landing. But if we start cutting rates, we won't get that soft landing. I believe inflation will go right back up, and then you're going to have to aggressively cut even higher. And that's going to push us into a hard, very hard landing.
Yeah.
So, So I believe Jerome Powell is doing the right thing right now. So if he continues doing what he's doing and ignores these analysts, I believe that we will have the soft landing. I'm going to invest with my money carefully. I took all my profits I made from Intel and I invested in Novo Nordisk. That's where my new investment is in. I'm holding still in Tesla and other ones, but you know it is what it is, man. That's what
Powell's in a tug of war with the government right now, which, you know, and I'm not going to get political here, but Powell trying to raise interest rates to conquer inflation, but the federal government keeps passing spending measures and debt spending that are trying to take us in the other way.
Exactly.
So I guess we'll see who wins out there. If we do have a spike in inflation again, this time we don't have the cushion backdrop of COVID stimulus checks to bail us out. So, you know, spike in inflation, that's probably not going to be, you know, good news at all.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Moving on. I want to move into some other topics here real quick. First topic is actually one of the headlines I have for you, but it kind of sways in on what we're just talking about, where to invest going forward. The the article is written by David Randall of Reuters, and it came out just this morning at 9:03 a.m. The headline reads, "Tax Loss Selling. Santa Rally Could Sway U.S. Stocks After November Melt Up." It goes in here and it gives a lot of good, compelling arguments here. It says here, the key catalyst for stocks will likely to continue to be the expected trajectory of the Federal Reserve's monetary policy. Evidence of a cooling economic growth has fueled bets that the U.S. Central Bank could begin cutting rates as early as the first half of 2024. This is what I'm talking about. People are these news people are coming out here pushing this narrative when I don't see it. Anyways, so it sparked a rally that boosted the S&P 500. That it's now 19.6% year to date. I don't think there's a lot of retail traders that are going to compete with that. Maybe some.
I did.
I did as well, but I mean,
I'm up 40%.
At the same time, seasonal trends have been particularly strong this year. In September, historically the weakest month for stocks, the S&P fell nearly 5%, right? But then the S&P gained nearly 9% in November, historically a strong month for the index. So what are we looking at here? What's going on? Overall, December has been the second best month for the S&P, with the index on up an average of 1.54% for the month since 1945. It is also the month most likely to post a gain, with the index rising 77% of the time in the S&P 500. So usually what this has, you see the second half of December is called Santa Claus rallies. The S&P has gained an average of 1.4% in this time period, and that goes back to 1950. Stocks that have not performed well, however, may face additional pressure in December from tax loss selling as investors get rid of losers to lock in write-offs before the end. So that's what you were beginning to talk about, Brandon, but that's what this article goes in depth to. So if you kind of want to know where to go, it gives you some names. It's a good article to read, but some of the names,
Pfizer's got to be on there. I would say it is.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of Pfizer's definitely on there. But you know, PayPal Holdings, CVS Health, others. What are your thoughts on that real quick?
I usually use that as a reason to buy.
Yeah, so, but you have to wait for the actual beginning of January, right? The first trading day in January to buy it. Yeah. And it's going to continue to go lower according to this article and from what statistics show.
You never, I mean, but for individual stocks, you never know. For individual, you could have a rebound and something that goes, you know, way too low, or a reaction hard to the downside. Usually, end of December, early January, I'm looking for weakness in stocks that I wanted to buy. Things that are on my watch list, I'm watching and seeing if I think they're of good value.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. And then there's also the, what is it? The Stockwash tax. So that if you sell a stock and then buy it back within 30 days, isn't it?
30 days.
Yep. You still get taxed. You get like an extra tax on it. It's, I've had that happen to me many times because I still have a day trading account. And oh man, I've been hit with that so many. I hate it single time. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why are you punishing me for being successful?
When I was more into swing trading, I had the same issue. I've tried to avoid it, but then sometimes the opportunity is so good that you just take the hit on it, and because you're going to make more money anyways. But yeah, it's terrible.
It's a horrible tax on trading and stock investing. When most traders who are trying to make money off this are not multi-billionaires or millionaires, they're everyday people who have a retail trading account that they're just trying to make some extra money for their retirement, so they can retire eventually at some point. So you're not really punishing the big guys,
yeah,
with that. You know,
there's so many barriers to entry for small-time day traders that the rich guys don't have to. The certain day trade rules and stuff like that target people that have under a certain amount of money. What is it, $20,000 for the day trading rule?
$20,000 for a day trading rule. If you get flagged, was it three times in a three-month period, they will no longer allow you to day trade.
Yeah.
You have to wait for funds to settle before you can buy and sell.
Yeah.
So. Yep. So another headline here. This one is from Jake Spring of Reuters, came out this morning, 10:37 a.m. This had to go back to a previous and let's talk about the previous part of earlier this week. There was news come out by OPEC that they were going to maintain the current cuts, and that they were going to have voluntary cuts in oil production. Here's the kicker on this. When they use the term voluntary, it means these companies are not signing deals or contracts or agreements saying that they have to abide by these rules. They are saying that these countries that are agreeing to this are saying that, yes, we will voluntarily cut this. What now, why that did not cause the price of oil to jump up the, you know, 2-3% or what have you, was because a lot of the big time investment banks do not believe these countries are actually going to continue with these voluntary cuts. Saudi Arabia is making more money than they need. They're building a wall city. So, I mean, they're not hurting. They'll continue their cuts. Russia can't continue. They can't continue their cuts, I believe. They have to sell more oil because they have to pay for a war that they have going on currently. So there's other countries that are in similar situations as Russia that I don't believe are going to continue with their cuts as well. So I think it's half and half. Some will continue with these voluntary cuts. Some won't. But they're voluntary. They didn't sign no agreements. So nobody's being held in to agreement on this. So that was the news that came out earlier this week. But also part of that big news of OPEC was something to do with this, the Brazil becoming a member of OPEC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the article now. Back to the article at hand. The headline reads, Lula says Brazil will never be a full member of OPEC Plus, only an observer. So, Brazilian president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, he said on Sunday that they're never going to be a full member of OPEC Plus. They're just an observer. This comes as earlier in the week that it was announced that Brazil was going to join OPEC, because Brazil is a oil producing country. Environmentalists in Brazil and abroad have criticized Lula's administration for pitching itself as a climate leader thanks to its success in reining in deforestation, Amazon rainforest, while still moving ahead with plans to drill massive offshore finds. So Brazil is up in their drilling and up in their oil, and they are now becoming a bigger player on the global front as far as oil. It's staying lower after these announcements. We expected it to jump up after these announcements, and it did not jump up. I mean, when you see cuts of millions of barrels per day, you expect oil costs to go up because supply is going down. But when you don't see the price going up, you wonder why. And then the speculation is that these countries are not going to fulfill their voluntary cuts. And then it was made worse when Brazil is saying they're going to be part of OPEC. But Brazil currently only does about 3 million barrels per day of production. So they don't have much production at all. They're not like Saudi Arabia or United States or Russia.
That's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, well, not a drop in the bucket. It's a good amount, but it's not 11, 12, 13 million barrels per day of what other countries are doing.
Yeah, exactly. And look at, you know, how much oil the world's using. The U.S. is like 50,000 barrels a day. Is that right? I mean,
The U.S. uses a lot of oil. But the U.S. also produces a lot of oil. And I covered this in an earlier podcast, and I believe it was about a month ago I covered this, of the new way that these oil companies are drilling, where they're able to actually get more out of their drilling per day than they were before because of efficiencies made due to technology. And that's why we're seeing fewer wells, but the same amount of production. But they do look to continue to drill in some of these wells, but BP and other companies are trying to make more environmental friendly oil, find easier ways of doing it. Go ahead.
I was way off. The United States consumes an average of about 20 million barrels of petroleum per day.
20 million. So we're not even keeping up with our own demand currently.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. Do you buy or sell oil companies based off this? If you believe the oil cuts are going to take place, if you believe that Brazil's moving in to join an OPEC, then you believe the cost of oil will go up, so then you make a buy into like an Exxon or Conoco, some of the bigger players there, as they continue to go up. Rig finally went down. I've told you that it was going to go down. That finally went down back to where a more normal price for that, because of the fact that technology has made it where they could get the same production of oil out of fewer drills. And so, you know, Rig Transocean makes all their money from these rigs, these oil rigs, these drills. So if there's fewer of them around, Transocean's going to make less money. That is what was my reasoning for why they were overvalued at the price they were at. There was at over $8 a share when I was making those comments. Currently, I'm pulling up as I'm speaking right now, and Rig is at $6.60 a share. So it finally came back down to a more reasonable cost. However, I did say ExxonMobil would stay at its current price to go up, and it did stay at its current price and go up. So there were, you know, in my string, I had a string there in the Q3 of this year where I got a number of things wrong. I did get oil right. That was one of my wins from Q3 this year. But I did get a number of things wrong in Q3, but not oil. So that's what I'm looking at as far as futures is, you know, I would, if you're going to do anything, make a bigger play, purchase more Exxon or Conoco or some of those other ones based off all these news and headlines. Any thoughts on oil, Brandon?
Yeah, I would go with the big companies, Exxon and Conoco. I wouldn't go for any small drillers or anything like that. I think the future for small drillers is always really volatile and always really uncertain, but I think it's getting more uncertain as days pass and we go into the future. I think that going with ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, BP, companies that have the ability to continue to survive even if oil comes down further in price, I think that's a smarter play.
BP has the CEO of BP has gone on CNBC, Bloomberg, all the stock news channels multiple times and said, if all cars in the world switch to EV by 2035, we will still be making the same amount of money as we're making now.
Which is wild.
It is crazy that he has come on TV and said that. And it's like, you know, you want to ask yourself, can you break that down for me where you're going to be making this money?
Right.
But like that's what he has said consistently said that. So he's not concerned in the least.
Well, some of these other oil companies have made other investments in lithium production and such. So,
yep. But I mean, there's troubles in those supply chains in Asia. I've covered it on just last week, the supply chains in Asia are having troubles on the lithium and so on and so forth. It's crazy. It's crazy. Last headline I got for you, man. This one is from Delon Thornton on CNBC.com. This one was published today at noon. Headline reads, "How America racked up $1 trillion in credit card bill. Americans have accumulated record-breaking $1 trillion in credit card debt." This comes as Federal Reserve interest rates have rate hike have caused an average interest rates for credit cards to spike to more than 22%. Retail credit cards are even higher, nearing 29% on average. Despite rising costs and higher borrowing rates, a record number of consumers shopped over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. The National Retail Federation found more than 200 million consumers hit the stores that weekend, right? However, here's the caveat to that. Big box retailers like Macy's and Nordstrom's have issued warnings about a slowdown in repayments on their credit cards over the summer. We announced that here on the show. We talked about how people, there was the failing rate of these credit card accounts had just ticked up by 2-3%, but that's actually a large number when you look at like how it only took 8-10% before for the housing market to start to tumble and fall. But the American consumer continues to be tested by a rising cost of groceries, gas, housing, and not to mention the return of student debt payments. Will more credit cards continue to fall is my question. And if it does, are we looking at more trouble for the Apple credit card, which has continuously for 1 year now? It's been out for 1 year. And Brandon, I've been critical of it this whole year. I'm still critical of it. Are we going to see trouble in things like the Apple credit card, these retail credit cards? You have the higher interest rates of 29% versus 22% for a normal credit card. You know, where are we going to see some of these troubles?
I mean, I don't know where it's going to pop its head up, but the thing is we just ran, you know, an entire decade with easy interest rates and low interest rates, trying to convince people to spend more and more and more and more and more, and trying to incentivize people to spend more and more and more, and they did. And the thing is now I think people are addicted to it. Interest rates on your credit card, that's on purpose. The Federal Reserve is spearheading that in order to try to get Americans to pull back on their spending. Instead, we're continuing to spend with those high interest rates. And, you know, that's not a good thing. I don't think it ends well.
I believe you got the American consumer hooked on a drug of credit usage. And now the Federal Reserve is trying to raise rates to get them off that drug, and they cannot.
Yeah.
They're addicted to credit usage, not just credit card, credit usage, buy now, pay later, you know, rent to own, you know, all kinds of different credit usages out there. People are just addicted to it. They're like, I can't afford this now, but I need to have it, you know?
Right.
And there's all, I could go down a whole rabbit hole of reasons for this, of things you see online, Instagram, Facebook. We could go down all kinds of places as to reasons for this, but yeah, that's the situation we find ourselves in. And if they can raise wages to keep up with it, then the American consumer will keep doing it. But eventually, I'm concerned about a spearhead into where wages are no longer keeping up, and now they're just going to have to default. That's the word I was looking for earlier. Default on a lot of these credit cards, and then that's going to, you know, it's going to tick even higher than the 3% jump we saw this year. You might see another 3-4% jump. Now you got problems at the credit card companies. Now you have problems at these retailers that depend upon credit cards, such as Macy's or Nordstrom's. So there you go. Final thoughts, Brandon, take it away. Final thought.
RPM International, if there is a recession, if you got to pull back on government spending and things like that, that might affect the stock. I really don't see the United States government pulling back on infrastructure. I think that's become a third rail in U.S. politics. I think pulling back on infrastructure for both the Republicans and Democrats is a very unpopular thing right now, especially if you see some sort of, you know, bridge collapse or some sort of, you know, situation within infrastructure unfold. That's really going to come back and haunt whatever party passes any spending reductions in the infrastructure line. So whatever your politics are, I think RPM International is still a good buy. 50 years of growth and 50 years of good returns there through recessions and through and prior inflation. But that's the headwind. I just don't think that it really takes RPM International down. I think it's a good buy.
Nice. I'm sticking with my Novo Nordisk buy. Someone threw a little tidbit at me this week. It was Big Bear AI was a company I was asked to look into. I looked into it. I kind of see where my first couple of questions back and forth with them via text was, you know, how does this company make money? Where are they making money? They have military contracts they go back and forth on. Here's how I look at this company. I look at this company as a smaller company trying to compete in the AI market, right? Now, there's going to be a lot of companies that anytime a new sector or a specialized sector comes out in the economy, a lot of companies join it. You have maybe 100 new companies that all come along, some small, big ones, you know, what have you. After about 4 to 5 years, you're down to about 20 or 15. Do I believe Big Bear AI is going to be one of the ones that make it? No, I don't. But I believe that you could make some money in that rise up before the bubble pops. That's my only advice. I say you could. I didn't say you will. You could see some money in the rise up before the bubble pops. That's my only advice. This is from a listener who actually listens to this show. They reach out to me. That's my advice to you. That's what I would say. But I'll be very careful and hesitant on it because there's so many other players that have better services that can provide the same service, but their eyes are concentrated elsewhere. But sooner or later, they'll tackle up that market that Big Bear AI is in currently. So that's my only concern there. Last thing I'm going to leave everybody with is this Saturday chinchilla picking. Not every year, but we've been around last year. I don't think we did last year. But we're going to try to do this every year. We sponsor a team for the Jingle Bell Run that gives money to the Arthritis Foundation. And we do the Jingle Bell. This is the only time you're actually going to see Brandon get out and do a walk or a run ever. So it's the one time a year. We hope to see everybody there in downtown Cincinnati this weekend as we do our 5K walk run. I am injured, but I will be doing the walk with Brandon. I usually try to jog it. I will be walking with Brandon this year as I'm hurt. But please join us. Come out, support the Arthritis Foundation. It's a great foundation, does a lot for people who suffer with arthritis. I always give to the Arthritis Foundation on my birthday. And if you know me, you know why. I always say that out there. But if you don't know, it's because arthritis has affected my family in a large way. And so for me, that's something that's near and dear to my heart as far as giving back. So this weekend, Chinchilla Pickin', Brandon and I will be out there walking. Come say hi. If you have any questions, please reach out to us, man. If you want to join the team, reach out to us as well. Cool. All right. Well, we thank you for listening. As always, we hope we've been entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. Have a good night.
Have a good night.